My name is Lawrence Allen.
I'm Ronald Shaw.
I'm Rahul Vora.
And this is Bad Time Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Bad Time Radio. First off, Ronald's out. He's attending to some personal matters, you know. I would normally make a mean-spirited crack, but he is actually going through some stuff right now. So I'm going to just say, Godspeed, Ronald, and I hope everything works out. So we got Brandon and Rahul, and we decided to let Brandon pick for once so that like whatever garbage we have to watch would be his fault. And Brandon picked the film Malignant. Now, before we do anything else, I think that if you were going to watch this movie, the best way to watch it is to go in without knowing anything about it at all. So I just want to go around and say yes or no. Would you recommend this movie so that if someone was like really wanting to watch it or not, you know, they could go in unspoiled. Fair?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So Brandon, would you recommend this movie?
Ultimately, in one word, yes.
Rahul, what are you thinking?
Yes.
Me as well. This thing's really cool. Go watch it. It's on HBO Max or whatever. Anyways, so Brandon, why'd you pick this?
So I picked this because more than 6 months ago, maybe a year ago, Brooke had watched this on Netflix, and I think I had had it on my list, meaning to watch it eventually, of 50 million other things. And she eventually watched it without me and was like, oh, you should watch this, and you guys should do it for the podcast because it would be a great movie. And I was kind of like, I didn't really know if it, like the way she described it to me, I thought that it was a silly or stupid movie, and it didn't sound like a good silly. And I kind of didn't believe her. And eventually, I was like, okay, well, I'll watch it myself and see if I think that's a good idea. And yeah, like I think that she was right the whole time. She was like perfectly nail on the head. So then, yeah, like a little while later when you're like, oh, it's my turn, I'm like, perfect. This is what it should be.
Hell yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let's go around and would you recommend this? Rahul, why don't you start us off?
I thought it was a little scary, especially the first half, but honestly, I thought this was a fantastic, it was just great. Like this is the kind of horror that is good. Had a sweet twist that I absolutely did not see. You know, it was just a good movie.
So, you know how like on movie posters a lot of the time they'll have like a weird quote from a critic where there's a lot of ellipses doing the like work, so it's like entertaining ... very fun, and you're like, I wonder, you know, what the critic actually said. I think you just said the first one where you could put it on the poster of the kind of horror that is good. Everyone would assume there were ellipses when there weren't.
It's just a good movie. Like, it's got creepiness. It's got you don't know what's going on. It's got a monster. I don't know. I'm not a horror aficionado at all. So the fact that I liked it, it's worth like at least 10 normal people's opinions.
Yep.
If not 1,000.
Yeah, definitely. When I go to pick a movie out of a genre, I want a recommendation from someone who actively doesn't like that genre. Anyways, yeah, for me, yeah, this movie, the first time I watched it, it struck me as a straight horror film until the last 30 minutes when it goes insane. Having rewatched it now, I'm like, this is actually a very successful horror comedy, where it's like actually scary and actually funny. In a way that most
comedy. I didn't laugh at anything.
They constantly talk about, for instance, at one point she talks about how this her past is a lost memory buried deep in the back of my head, or the fact that they keep talking about how he's all in her head, or the fact that like after this parasitic twin has emerged from the back of her head and started doing kung fu, a woman just looks at it and goes, "What the fuck?" or that scene, you know, I can go on, but anyways, yeah. So check this out. It is the rare horror comedy that is both funny and scary. Most of the time, horror comedies ultimately come down on they're funny or they're scary. I think that this is the only one I've seen that is both in about equal measure, and I really enjoyed it. Brandon, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I would add to what you said about all the sort of like puns about in the back of her head and things like that, that I went into this like this week not actually being looking forward to watching it because I had already watched it relatively recently. And I was like, oh, once I know the twist, like, I just don't think it's going to be as good. I think I'm going to just feel like I'm kind of sitting through it just to jog my memory of the plot and all the details. But actually, yeah, I think it was a little better on rewatching it because I know the twist. Then there's all these little details ahead of the twist that that are actually funny. So it was actually a little bit better watching it the second time.
Yeah, watch it. It plays fair with the twist. Like, there's no way in hell you could guess the twist because the twist is actively insane. But it gives you, like, a surprising amount of clues to the point where you actually see Gabriel walking around backwards at one point pretty clearly. So,
yeah, but it's hard. You just, it's like your brain will not
possibly concede.
Right, you're like, what is that? You think it's a monster, right? Because the walking backwards is weird. Oh, monster.
And then it turns out, I mean, it is a monster, but it's like a different kind. Yeah. Anyways, you guys ready for the summary? Or let's roll for it. Fair? Right. Anyone not want to be on it? Okay, here we go. Ah, shit, it's Rahul. Okay. Right. Everyone, Rahul, you want a minute 30, 2, 3, how long you want?
Give me a solid 15.
Not doing that. Too long.
Come on, dude.
No. This podcast is hopefully going to be about an hour, and I'm not spending 15 minutes of it with you. I assume you're going to just descend instantly.
So then the monster, now, yeah, he's in the house.
Rahul, real talk. You would get bored with the summary very quickly and start meandering onto topics about like how much I want to fuck Anixia or whatever the hell.
Which, you know, is a good topic.
Rahul has become upset, thinks that one, Anixia is current content, and two, that I'm sexually attracted to her. It's very strange.
You are, dude. Pretty sure you is.
Yeah, I really like dragons rendered with very few numbers of polygons.
All right, Brandon, why don't you render a ruling right now? Is Lords into Anixia or not?
I'm going to have to say no, only because I don't think Anixia is one of the dragons
court.
That has
God. He passed you money, PayPal or something.
I mean, I
fucking knew it, dude.
I think she has a cloaca.
From year.
Yeah. I think she legitimately has a cloaca, because I don't see how you can lay that many eggs without one.
Okay. Actually, I changed my mind. If he knows that, then yes.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. I thought about Anixia's genitals, so therefore I must want to fuck
her. Is a cloaca a genital? Is that?
Yeah, that's what it's just one hole that functions for everything, and you usually find them on things that lay a lot of eggs.
Oh, okay. Anyway.
Yep. Okay, so I'm going to give you 3 minutes.
Sure. All right. So the credits start with 2000s metal music. Fucking sweet. You know what's going on. And it goes to a monster in a facility, some researchers doing something to it. It basically almost kills its way out, but they're able to subdue it, and you don't know what happens. Then it cuts to present day. A husband beats his wife, kind of bad, and then the night of a monster kills the husband, and she has a miscarriage. This is like her third or fourth miscarriage, as an aside. The monster predictably comes back to bother her in her house where her husband died. Her sister bothers her. And then she reveals to her sister, she's like, oh, I'm an orphan. So, you know, starting to put clues together. All right, so it cuts to a woman giving a tour of the underground of Seattle. And, you know, monster appears. Bad stuff happens. Abducts her. You're not sure exactly what happens. Okay. Next day, the monster calls a doctor who turns out to be the doctor from the very beginning, threatens her, and kills her. Okay. And then while he's killing people, the woman in the beginning, Madison, gets these visions of those kills. So you think they're like telepathically connected or something. The second person the monster kills is some fat man. I don't remember who he is. And then they go to the cops and they're like, hey, I've got visions of this murder, these murders that keep happening. And then they, she's like, oh, where was this murder? They go find the fat dude who was killed. And then she reveals, she's like talking to her family and she was like, she mentions the name of the voice and her mom's like, oh, creepy. And then they reveal that they have a video of her talking to Gabriel. Gabriel is like, I'm going to kill your parents or something, blah, blah, blah. The detective who kind of is interested in Madison's sister, figures out who's the next target based on all the people, based on like some medical records, finds the monster, chases underground Seattle. He makes a good show of it, almost kills it. He keeps chasing way too far, goes super underground, and beats it off and it runs away. And then the detective goes back and asks Maddie to undergo hypnotherapy to unlock some hidden memories. I don't remember what happens after that. Some hidden memory regarding Gabriel, I assume. And then Gabriel somehow gets Madison blamed for something.
Okay, so first off, the way he gets Madison blamed for something is that he had a woman tied up in her attic and she somehow falls through the floor, nearly killing a police officer, which is a great way of framing someone for kidnapping.
Yeah, yeah. That's solid. I mean, you know, what are you supposed to think if you're a cop? Although, yeah. That, then, okay, he didn't really, he wasn't trying to frame her.
Yeah, he was not just really an accident.
Directly, it was just an accidental framing.
Yeah.
And he was also keeping the murder weapon there.
Yeah, Brandon, would you like to like actually say the twist that Rahul didn't quite get to?
Okay, so yeah, the twist that we didn't get to is Madison's sort of building that she has a psychic link with the monster, and she has these memories. She's getting back in touch with these memories of Gabriel, who originally they thought was her imaginary friend, but you know, somewhat real consequences kept happening. And there were instances where she would do something bad or like threaten somebody with a knife, and then sort of wake up from this, you know, sleepwalking like state and say it was Gabriel. And eventually her sister that she was adopted into finds the original video footage of the hospital that she was in as a child, where they were interacting with this Gabriel creature, which is like a twin that fused with her and is like coming out of her back / the back of her head. And he had like sort of these telekinetic electrical powers, and was super strong. And before being adopted, because, you know, the opening scene where they couldn't control him, and he was just super dangerous, they like cut most of him out and then like shoved the rest of him into the back of her skull and just like, you know, sewed it up and, you know, chop, chop, that's it.
Yeah. And it just worked somehow. Impossibly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the big reveal is when the cops take her and then she just, well, Gabriel like locks her into a mental prison and then just commences slaying.
Like his head somehow pushes through the back of her skull in a way that somehow he can just go back and it's fine, which doesn't seem possible. And then he runs around backwards doing a fuck ton of kung fu and also murdering people with electricity powers that he has for some reason. And it's pretty fucking fantastic to watch. And nope, they do not explain why he has electricity powers.
Yeah, I mean, they can't. It's kind of better that they didn't. You know, at the beginning, she's like, I call it the devil, so.
Yep, that explains
it. Somewhat demonic, you know, electricity powers, demons, they go hand in hand.
Yep. Anyways, I guess let's get to some high points, which I'm going to start with. My high point is the abusive husband. Hold on, don't get mad, because she comes home and she's like, hey, I left work early because I'm pregnant and I'm feeling tired. And he's instantly like, he's it's like everything he says, you can see him turning the dial up one of the how shitty of a husband I am, like up one more. So he starts by saying, well, maybe you should quit your job. And then somehow like escalates within three lines to shouting at her for having a miscarriages and then slamming her into a wall. And it is such a drastic and like seemingly unprovoked escalation that it reads as comic to me. Like,
yeah, it's definitely very weird because it starts out like I kind of read him as, oh, he's worried about her, you know, that like she shouldn't be going to work if she's feeling bad. She's like putting her body through stress. But then like she turns off the MMA fight that he's watching and he flips out, and then he just like snaps, and now he's like in abusive husband mode, where yeah, then he's like throws like the previous miscarriages in her face, and like it's her fault, and it's like, what? Like he just completely flipped
yeah
the attitude.
He goes from, hey, I'm worried that you're so tired, to how many times do I have to watch my babies die inside you in the space of like a minute? It's pretty weird. Yeah. Anyways, anyone else got high points?
I like the filming. It was like, I don't know. It was like a 2000s movie made now. Kind of interesting.
Yeah, there's this incredible overhead tracking shot where they're following her around the house and the camera's like up on the second floor. But the house has like some rooms that go all the way up to like the roof of the second floor. So sometimes you'll see down into her, and sometimes like it'll go over, like she'll go underneath a room or something. And then she gets up on the second floor and it's tracking her there. And it is really cool.
Yeah, this movie is quite a fan of spinny shots and big, long, loopy shots through giant houses.
Yeah, apparently, I mean, Brandon, you could comment on this. Apparently the Seattle, there's a lot of enormous houses that you can get for, I don't know, she doesn't seem that rich, although I guess they never really explain what she does aside from vague medicine.
She's a nurse.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what part of Seattle she's in.
I think she's in the part that's actually California.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. But
is your house like that, Brandon?
Yeah.
Not really. Like my neighborhood doesn't really look like that.
Does your house have an attic with a giant industrial spinning fan in one wall for some reason?
Unfortunately, no.
No, that's too bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I also really liked the overhead shot in the beginning. And yeah, just definitely a lot of, there weren't any other shots like that, but definitely a lot of the kind of camera work was good. Both the first time and this time, I kept just being kind of like amazed that this was made by James Wan. And one thing Brooke actually looked into is that I guess he said that he really likes using like red and blue lights, which after she said that, it's like, yeah, basically every scene is either red or blue, which
signified that she was trapped in her head, right?
So at least sometimes.
Gabriel,
I mean,
was trapping her.
The most prominent red scene that I remember is the killing the fat guy, who was one of the second doctors that was like working with her and Gabriel, because it was like a big red sign outside of his apartment, which that scene was like hilarious. He's like so ridiculous, like the window, he like he's getting ready for bed and then like the window's open and it's raining outside and he's like, huh, and then he like sees water, like footsteps basically leading into his closet, and so he's like, huh, he goes in there, he turns the light on, he's like, oh, there's nothing in here, so he like gets a towel and he cleans up the water, window still open, still like raining.
Yeah, insane room. Insane to order of operations to clean it up and then remove the thing that's making it dirty.
Yeah,
also the fact that he has like concrete proof that someone has gone in that window and walked to that closet and then he just like shrugs it off.
Maybe he thought it was his own footsteps. He just didn't notice his own wet feet.
He didn't know that he walked in a place.
There's nothing else, man. I mean, if I saw footsteps, I'd just jump out the window. I'm not dealing with that.
Yeah. you jump out the window and shout, it's your house now, make sure you feed the cats, as you run away. Yeah. Let's see. Another high point. I really admire just the sheer craftsmanship of whoever made that Surgeon of the Year trophy, that apparently it's made out of such metal that you can like somehow detach part of it and sharpen it to have a razor sharp edge and make it into a super knife.
Yeah, that's not one of those like plastic, you know, soccer participation trophies. Like that was serious metal.
Little strange. I also really liked how Gabriel had such an attachment to his belongings for some reason. I didn't quite understand why he wanted them back, why he went back to the police
police station.
No,
yeah.
he called what's his face?
He
like,
called
oh,
the detective.
Back. Yeah. I was like, why? It didn't seem like it was that hard to get. Like,
I mean, Did he? Maybe they got that like knife, that trophy for doing this. I mean, the surgery to put Gabriel back, it's definitely like a crime because it killed a guy. But it also seems really hard. So maybe they won some kind of evil scientist award for it, and that's like why he's so attached to it, because it's like this is the award you got for murdering me, essentially.
I guess. I mean, did they even get the award for that?
Because I mean, if they were
shut down and abandoned, and then they went somewhere else and started new careers.
Yeah, I mean, it was some kind of award for being a good doctor, but if it was for that, they didn't say it.
Sorry, you go ahead.
Well, I mean, it just sort of seems like you shouldn't really tell people that you did a surgery that killed a guy.
Well, I mean,
yeah, on purpose.
It was a devil creature.
They walk into the awards committee and they're like, okay, now we killed a guy. But before you judge us, here's a picture of the guy. Look how gross he looks.
Is it really killing a guy? That is like, I don't know. I think that's pushing it. Like, did you see that? He's like an animated skeleton with electricity powers. I think you're well within your rights to kill that. I mean,
what if it was an animated skeleton without electricity powers?
Oh, then it's murder.
Okay.
I love, this is like so ridiculous. It's like the doctor is like, Gabriel, who is that? Like, there was some, like, how would you forget that?
Yeah, how would you forget this monster?
You're gonna have to be more specific. I've killed a lot of monster-y electricity creatures in my time.
It's like, also, the fact that he has electricity powers only exists to fake you out and make you think it might be a ghost. It only works on a screenplay level. It's never explained inside the screenplay at all. And I kind of love it for that, honestly.
Yeah, he somehow developed so much control, he can access a cellular network, authenticate himself, and call people, which is pretty impressive, you know, figuring
or
out
he's,
modulation, demodulation.
Or he's faking
schemes.
The cell signal somehow, but that's also very important. Yeah. Aw, buddies. Let's see. Brandon, do you have another high point?
Yeah, hang on a second.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. Rahul, why don't you vamp? Yeah.
I liked the walking backwards thing. I think they made it work. You know, it almost seems like gimmicky, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't make complete sense because, you know, Gabriel version of her was like super strong. And stuff.
That's another. Yeah, that's just another random superpower Gabriel has.
Yeah, like, and like your joints would be super fucked up from like walk. You know, he's like twisting him in a position to make walking backwards easier, which isn't really a thing.
And he explicitly dislocates both of her arms to make it so she can reach forward.
Yeah.
Although that chick must be doing some crazy, like, cardio, or not cardio, like Pilates or yoga or something to be able to do all them bendy bends, you know?
Maybe Gabriel was doing it when she was asleep.
Yeah.
Yeah, just getting some workouts in while he's also, you know, biding his time to get back to murder.
I did really like how, this is like one of those little clues, right? I knew it meant something, but that her head was always bleeding.
Yeah,
that was a good one.
The story really is that apparently when her husband, you know, real husband of the year material over here, hit her head against the wall for having miscarriages and turning off his UFC fight, it like cracked her skull or something enough that Gabriel woke up. And that's why all this stuff started happening. Although apparently Gabriel had also been eating her previous fetuses to make himself stronger. And that's why she kept miscarrying, which... a slightly distasteful detail, but, you know, this is also a movie where a woman's head gets stomped so hard that her eyeball pops out and you see it. So, I don't know. It's weird to draw the line at miscarriage. And yet I somehow did. Anyways, yeah. Brandon, more high points?
So I did like all the transition music in this movie. There were maybe a few times where it felt a little bit discontinuous with the level of intensity versus like the transition that was happening, but overall I like that.
I agree completely. Like there was this one scene where it first reveals the monster or something like that, and it's like playing this heavy metal music, and I'm like, this doesn't really fit to me. Like it was a strange choice of music and intensity for that exact scene.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, like the main theme from the movie is like basically where is my mind with like a different bridge or whatever you'd call it, which I mean makes a lot of sense once you know the like gag of the movie, but it's also such a strange choice.
Yeah.
Because, you know, where is her mind, Brandon? Where is her mind?
It's in the back of her head.
Yeah.
I also really liked, this kind of goes back to like the comedy aspect of it. I really liked the scene where Sydney, I think her name is, the main girl who has Gabriel in her, is, oh no, wait, is that her sister?
Madison.
Yeah, Madison. Yeah. Madison and Sydney. Yeah, okay. So Madison is telling her sister that she was adopted. And it just looks so funny because it's like as if a parent was telling a child like I'm sorry, you know, you're adopted, but it's like the person who knows they're adopted telling the sister. It was just very weird.
Yeah,
it role is reversal. Weird. It was kind of funny because then backwards. Yeah, Sydney also looked like really upset by it.
But, which I don't think I would be upset if one of my siblings was adopted. Just be like, I don't know.
Yeah, although you don't really like your siblings very much, I don't think.
What? I'm fine with my siblings.
Fair enough.
Sibling.
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
I don't know. You don't like most people. It seemed like a pretty good guess. You know, I'm looking it over a little bit because I was just curious. This is neither here nor there, I suppose, but who do we think like has a bet of the two Saw guys, Leigh Whannell or James Wan, who do we think has like the better sort of track record? I'm looking. So Leigh Whannell made Upgrade, which is a very good horror movie. Insidious and The Invisible Man, I think would be his best ones. And then James Wan, his most things are Furious 7, Insidious, The Conjuring, Insidious Chapter 2, Dead Silence, which is a really fucking stupid movie about killer puppets. And then the Aquamans.
How I think did he get selected for Furious 7 and Aquaman? It seems like he's a horror guy.
Well, they often, like, on those big franchises, as both a way of getting people excited and as a way of keeping costs down, they'll pick, like, a sort of indie or more minor director and give him a shot with the idea that they're going to get a fair amount of hand-holding. Although by that point, he had directed so many movies, he might not have needed it. But that's how you end up with like Gareth Edwards directing Godzilla versus or the first Godzilla, or I forget her name, but the woman who did the woman who directed The Eternals, who was Chloe Zhao directing The Eternals. You know, it lets them keep, or that woman who made Candyman. You know, they'll pick up like an interesting indie director and just throw them into it. And it also lets the studio kind of have a heavier hand because they know the director is unlikely to push back if it's their first big movie, you know?
Yeah.
So that might have been what was happening. Or maybe, I mean, he's done a lot of pretty good blockbusters, so it's not insane that they just saw that he would be good at making blockbusters. Anyways, I'm going to give it to Leigh Whannell because he made The Invisible Man, which is like actually a classic. And I think he just like took fewer like shots.
And yeah, the shots he took were better. Fast and Furious 7?
No, I haven't.
Well, okay, then you don't have a fair opinion.
I've seen Upgrade though. That movie fucking rules. Brandon, have you seen Upgrade?
I haven't seen Upgrade or Invisible Man.
Oh man, you should check them both out.
Oh, he has seen Furious 7.
I have seen Furious 7, so okay, I'm tempted to just give it to Leigh Whannell.
Yeah. Unofficial plug for Upgrade and The Invisible Man. Upgrade is a very good action horror movie about a guy who gets a chip in his head with an artificial intelligence on it, but things are not as they seem. And also it makes him a super fighter and the fight scenes are so cool. And The Invisible Man is about what if your dick ex-boyfriend could turn invisible? Yep.
I don't know. Would you break up with him? Would you not?
Is it like No. He won't let you break up with him, and he is very abusive. Yeah.
I don't like. Anyways, that.
I guess you did. You say you do or don't like.
I don't like that.
Okay. Good.
All right. I'm gonna have to discontinue some special research I'm working on.
On invisibility or on how to be an abusive boyfriend.
Oh God.
Okay. Anyways, I guess I have one last high point, and then I guess we go around and see, you know, who else. or other high points. So when she gets thrown in prison, the two main women she's interacting with, one of them is, I believe, Zoe Bell, who's just a famous New Zealand stunt woman who did a lot of work on Xena and also was in Death Proof. And, you know, that's fine. She gets in there, she does a little, you know, whatever, being scary. But the other woman is an African-American woman who, for some reason, it's just dressed like Coffee or Boxy or Foxy Brown or whatever. You know, I almost said Boxy Brown, yeah. You know, enormous afro, dressed in like one of those like jumpsuit, like disco jumpsuit things in a floral pattern. And it's like, why is this 70s woman blaxploitation hero in a Seattle prison in the 2020s?
Like, this is a little wow. They must have just had fun dressing this character.
Yeah. And then she gets her throat torn out almost instantly.
Yeah.
Okay, Brandon, any other high points?
I think I do have one other high point, which is that... Yeah, I think that I think that they did do a good job with all the sort of backwards fighting. And one thing I really liked was the very end of the police, like the police headquarters shootout scene, where the two main detectives are like the only people left alive. I guess there's also like one other person in the background, but anyways, they're like fighting Gabriel and the girl cop gets like her stomach slashed and she like empties a shotgun, but misses. And then the male detective, I forget exactly what happens, but he gets somewhat incapacitated, but like gets a shot off.
His arm is broken, right?
Yeah. She does something really twisted complicated involving a chair.
It definitely like twisted. I don't remember if it broke it, but, then anyways, they get separated from Gabriel and they start trying to escape out of the other side of the room. And Gabriel just like picks up another chair and like winds up and just flings it across the room and just like at super high speed just hits them and they go down. And it looks kind of silly, but then he's just like, even though he's done all this gruesome stuff to other people, like twisting their heads and slashing them open and whatnot, he's just like, yeah, throwing a chair at them. Like, they're good. I'm done. I'm leaving now. So he just like leaves them alive,
yeah,
to, you know, intervene in a later scene.
Also, at the end of that scene, this like meek little tech comes in and she sees all the carnage and starts panicking and pulls out her phone and starts to dial the police. And then she pauses for a second and goes, why am I calling the police?
Yeah.
You know what? Another great joke in this movie. Okay, Raul, anything else? Any other high points?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. I guess let's go to low points. I honestly, like, I've got things that the twist being stupid, kind of, I think is, this movie knows it's dumb, so I don't know if it counts. And I don't really have much else, honestly. Anyone else got, like, actual things that they think are wrong with this movie?
One is that, you know, this is, like, a common thing, is that, like, why are people so inaccurate with firearms? That's my one thing. You know, because she was in a entire police station and like nothing, you know.
Yeah, my semi-serious answer to this is that it is actually very hard to hit a moving target with a pistol like that, especially one that is moving so strangely. Like all of your intuitions about how to hit a running human, which is what those guys would have intuitions on, would be wrong for her,
because yeah, I don't know anything about firearms. It probably is hard to hit a moving target, but
They are sucking at it, yeah.
Yeah, I think the shotgun was the only thing that stood out and bothered me a little bit, where she like had three pretty close range shotgun shots and completely missed.
Yeah. I mean, that's like just a thing that has to happen in these sort of movies,
yeah,
where the guy really likes an edge weapon. You either have to have him be bulletproof or dodge, and they went with dodging.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Although later on, like, the hunky detective actually shoots her, and there's a close-up of the bullet hole, like, straight up through her body. Like, you can see through it, and it's like, okay, so I guess she is going to die later. But it doesn't seem survivable. Yeah. Any other low points, man?
I think I have, like, a minor low point and then just kind of more of a question. But my minor low point would be the very end when they've like subdued Gabriel. Madison has taken over control again, and she's talking to her sister, and she does this whole like, you know, oh, I was looking for a she's so upset about losing her children to miscarriages because she knew she was adopted, so she didn't have a biological connection to anybody, and she thought that would like fill the hole in her life, right? And so this ending dialogue is like, oh, you know, I'm so sorry, I was looking for a biological connection, but it was right in front of me all along, meaning like her sister through adoption. And it's like, but that's just literally not true. So it's like, it doesn't feel like meaningful the way they're trying to make it feel meaningful. And I almost wish that they could have found a way to make a joke out of that instead, like kind of like the whole, you know, back in the back of my mind or back of my head in that vein. But
yeah, or just say, have her say like blood relations are overrated or something, you know.
Yeah.
Also, that like is mentioned one scene before, and if it's supposed to be like her whole character's arc of realizing that like blood, you know, blah blah blah, they really need to have had her talk about it more than once before. I don't actually want that because it would slow the movie down, so I would just cut it, honestly. But, you know, if you want that to be important, you got to put in more time. Hit me.
In the end, this just jogged my memory when Gabriel is like rampaging, about to kill Maddie, I think? Or no, kill the sister.
Sydney.
And the mom wakes up and she's like, I'm sorry, Gabriel. I should have loved you. You are my son. I was like, oh, brother, please. Come on.
I mean, it is wonderful to love your kids, but when they're like, if he just looked weird, then she should have loved him. But he is actively evil at all times.
Pretty sure he's just fucking... It's like, I don't know. It's like, this movie is not about the redemptive power of love. It's about something else. It's like,
it's about a weird twin in the back of your head who makes you do kung fu.
And Gabriel's like, oh, and he's like, he's like not gonna, I don't even know, he's like lowering his weapon, right? Like that did it for him.
Yeah,
I was like, yeah, I don't know about that, man. Seems like you've got a pretty good idea. It doesn't seem like a lack of motherly love is the reason you're Gabriel, you know?
Yeah. It seems like you're Gabriel because you were born a weird evil monster and continued to be one for your entire life.
Yeah, and like, even though they don't show a lot, like they obviously don't show a lot of the origin of like what happened to him at the hospital, yeah, it does seem weird that even though he's going after the people that, like the doctors especially, that like, you know, cut him up and shoved him in Madison's head, and sort of imprisoned him, that part makes sense. But it doesn't really make sense that he's like really mad at his mom for abandoning him necessarily, because it's not like he was, at least as far as we know, it's not like he was a product of medical experimentation. And like, oh, you know, you let them do this to me or whatever. It's like, yeah, you were born like this crazy evil thing. It's kind of seemed like they were just trying to do the best that they could to sort of cure slash contain him. And then only as a, like a last resort, they're like, yeah, we can't handle this. So they imprisoned him. It's like not really a, you know, you made me a monster kind of thing, the way they're trying to make it seem at certain parts.
Yeah. And the scene, we see the scene where they finally decide to cut him out. And over the course of that scene, he like murders three people and like maims two more and has to be put down with a tranquilizer dart that the hospital conveniently has. So it sure does seem like they gave him a lot of rope before eventually they're like, fuck it, we got to cut you out.
Oh, yeah. Fuck it. let's just shove it back into her head.
That really is a very much a fuck it, let's just do it and be legends moment of the surgery right there.
They're like, we couldn't figure out a way to fully divorce it from her brain. I mean,
if I'm really going that far, I'm at least cutting its eyes out.
Yeah, you know, like cutting out what you can. I mean,
yeah,
there's probably not much you really can do for. For preserving her neural function, but I mean, it's probably better than having Gabriel have any level of control.
I mean, at the very least, it seems like his eyes aren't probably important to her neural network.
He would have just taken over her eyes, right?
I mean, he can like manipulate her eyes, but it doesn't quite seem
actually,
like
he, why I don't, did it's not, why did he even why didn't he just use her eyes?
it kind of doesn't seem like he can see out of them fully, although they don't really explain like what the experience of being this thing is, which is fair because probably would be pretty hard to make a movie about that, especially a fun, stupid horror movie.
Yeah.
I mean, also usually when he's I think actually maybe always when he's taking control of her eyes close because she's kind of, as if she's in a unconscious state. So in that sense, it's like physically impossible because she closes her eyes when he takes control. So even if he could then channel them to his, you know, vision, they're closed, which although I don't know if he's controlling the rest of her body, he could open them, but yeah.
Yeah. Actually at the very end, it's revealed that not in the end, but the police fight scene, it's revealed that Gabriel is able to like make her fully hallucinate where she is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's like so the whole thing.
I don't even know why he let her see the murders.
Like, well, what's the point? I think he just kind of, he's an asshole who likes like torturing her, essentially.
I guess so. I mean, there's no other reason, right? It would just expose you.
Yeah, most of the reasons he does anything are just like he's an evil monster man. That's kind of his whole deal.
Why was he hanging around the Seattle Underground?
That's where his mom was.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, like after, I guess he was just using it to run around the city.
Yeah, he wasn't hanging out there. He was hanging out in the very spacious attic of her house.
But when he ran away from the detective, he knew his way around the underground.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Yes, I looked it up. It is actually 100% real.
You should not go there.
It's full of weird parasitic twin monsters.
Yeah, I've been there once. It was pretty cool. But I also know that there's like a nighttime version of the tour that I haven't done yet, which sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
How does it not collapse with all the city above it?
Magnets.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they reinforced it specifically when they did that to stop it from collapsing.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, you can only reinforce so much before things just degrade and it just... I don't know. I guess it's clearly working.
For now. Until Gabriel gets
there. They should definitely make a sequel because it's set up for a sequel. I mean,
yeah.
How the end is like a happy ever after thing. And it's like, I don't know if people are really going to buy that. You know, okay, even if you buy that it wasn't her, you're still locking her up.
I mean, you got us put Gabriel in jail, and Gabriel's in her body. Gabriel committed like ultra murder.
He killed like 400 people.
Legitimately, this is the kind of thing where it's like going to be talked about on almost the same level as 9/11. What he did in Seattle, killing that many cops at once, you know. And it really doesn't seem like anyone's going to believe this weird story about a parasitic twin taking over her body. So, yeah, it kind of seems like she is going to prison.
Yeah.
What prison can hold Gabriel, though, you know?
None.
Yeah.
The prison of her mind.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Oh, I did actually think of a low point, which is at one point we see an old guy that Gabriel's going to murder for doing surgery on him. And the old guy's reading an iPad in a bathtub. And you know what? Them shits is expensive and that's dangerous. Don't do that.
Aren't they sort of waterproof? Let me check.
Yeah, go huck yours in
the waterproof. Well, the iPhone is okay. According to LifeWire, they're not waterproof.
Well, Rahul, who are you going to believe, LifeWire or your own eyes? Go grab your iPad and huck it in the tub. Let's see what happens.
Okay, deal.
Hell yeah. Anyways, I guess you guys, any other parting shots or anything on this one?
So I have a sort of pseudo low point, which is that in the beginning, they make it seem, I mean, obviously the whole electricity powers is like, you know, in the realm of supernatural, but in the beginning, they really make it seem like it's a supernatural monster because of the way they do the first murder of like the husband and Madison getting attacked. And then like the follow-up nights of him, Gabriel coming back. And one thing they do with the husband getting killed is He's sleeping on the couch because Madison locked herself in the room after getting hit in the head because she just like didn't trust him, even though he was like instantly like, oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to do that. So he's sleeping on the couch. He wakes up in the middle of the night to some noise. Then the, like a blender turns on in the kitchen. He goes and turns that off. Then the refrigerator door opens. He goes and closes that. Then the TV turns on in the living room. So he walks back in there. And when he goes in there, you have like a brief moment of seeing Gabriel sitting on the couch, which he somehow doesn't notice. But then he like turns the TV off and turns the light on and Gabriel's not there. But then they do this shot like 15 seconds later or something after already seeing that Gabriel's not there of the couch cushion. And it's like decompressing as if someone had just gotten up, or what in my mind originally watching it was like, oh, it's like he's invisible or he's a ghost or something. And he was sitting there until just that moment and stood up. But that isn't what happened. And that's like the only thing in the movie that kind of has that like implying something supernatural to it. And it's just, I don't see how it's consistent with anything else. So I don't really know why they like really deliberately put that in there.
Yeah, I guess maybe first off, they put you in there just, you know, like you said, freak to fake out. That's the real reason. We can come up with something about like how Gabriel can move really fast and blah, blah, blah. But I'm not really remembering the timing. I thought it was a little bit quicker between when he turned the light on and the thing was gone, and then like it cut almost immediately there. But if it wasn't, then that's really silly. I mean, it's not really silly, but it's like cheating, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, why did Gabriel even bother instead of just going for it?
Because he's a nasty little stinker, you know? He likes fucking people. Why'd he tie the mother up in the fucking weird fan room, you know?
I mean, First of all,
not weird to have that room.
Have you ever seen a house with that roll? What possible reason could that serve?
Clearly to vent the heat out.
Especially in Seattle, which is notoriously incredibly wet. So therefore,
Seattle's hot, dude. I don't know. I just say shit. I'm trying to justify this. I've never been to Seattle.
But I mean, famously, in a wet climate, what you want is a part of your house that is always open to the outside air, and also usually dark, because you kind of want to get a mold room going, you know?
A cheese room, they call it.
Yeah, not because you keep cheese in there, but because it starts smelling like it after a while, you know?
It just grows out of the house, dude.
Yeah.
Gives it a nice antique-y look. I was going to say, also, now that I think about it, the first scene doesn't make any sense at all, because Gabriel should have been happy that, like, he should have liked the husband because he set Gabriel free.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess Gabriel is kind of possessive of the body, or maybe he's just like, hey, here's a guy I can murder. I haven't done that in a while. Let's get back into the groove.
Yeah, like a warm up. True.
Yeah. It's like that Aqua Teen Hunger Force thing where it's like, you know, are we sure we want to wake him up? Because if I looked like that, I would just try to murder the first thing I saw. that's what happened.
That's exactly what happened. I really thought there was going to be a blender death the first scene.
Yeah, that, okay, you know what? That is a legitimate low point. It really seemed like they were setting up a blender death, and then it did not happen. And you shouldn't tease Lawrence like that with a blender death.
I had to look away because I didn't want to see a blender death.
Oh, man, you don't want to see Blender Death, bro? Blender Death rules. Bro, Brandon, have you seen Your Next?
Yes.
Yeah, Blender Deaths, man. Best thing you can put in a movie.
Yeah, that was a good movie.
Oh, yeah. Anyways, I guess you guys ready for a game?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, so this game, I stole it from Ronald, but I really like it, and he hasn't done it in a long time. So this is Fuck, Marry, Kill with random movies. So I'm going to give you guys three movies. I've got a thing that generates random movies. I've tilted it a little bit to be movies that we are likely to know something about. And I'm going to clip randomize and give you three. And then you have to tell me if you want to fuck them, marry them, or kill them. Right? Pretty standard.
All right.
Ready?
Who's going first? Brandon, you go first.
Yeah, Brandon, go first.
Sure. Wait, I haven't played this game in a long time. So you still end up like, you know, sleeping with that thing is long term.
Right. Yeah, it's like a real relationship. Fuck is like a horrid one-night stand, and kill is, you know, you do what Gabriel did to all those people in the movie.
Got it.
In case you don't know what death is. Anyways, here we go.
Dude, if I was Gabriel, I would sleep with so many people. I'm not gonna lie.
How would that possibly work? Just, I guess, butt stuff? It's butt stuff, or...
I'm just saying, you know, like, why murder? You have so many options.
Okay, I just had the truly nightmarish image of you doing something. This is gross, so, you know, but you're doing someone doggy style, and then you look down at the back of their head, and it's just Gabriel looking up at you.
It's not doggy anymore, is it?
Just making aggressive eye contact.
For some reason, Gabriel couldn't talk. He had to, like, call you.
He could talk some. Remember when they're like, what do you want from me? And he's like, to show you what the cancer has become. You know what?
Wasn't that through the phone?
Well, that was still through the phone, though. He called the doctor.
Really? Okay, I thought he was saying it as he was about to stab her.
I thought at the beginning it established, because he was like talking through the radio to them. They're like, oh, he's saying power over the radio. I thought it established that he couldn't talk for some dumb reason.
I mean, he has a mouth, but literally nothing else. Like, no lungs.
Actually, he may have had a mouth before he got all surgified.
He has a mouth now, too, because, like, you see it and he goes, rah, a couple of times with it, you know?
But, like,
actually scary.
Not that scary, though.
Yeah. Anyways, let's go, okay?
Okay.
So, you first, Rahul.
Oh, so okay.
Okay. Right. Your three movies are Ant-Man, Aqua Teen Hunger Force : movie film for theaters.
Oh, man.
And The Lucky One, which I know nothing about, but the photo is just a hot dude holding, I think, maybe that Taylor woman from Orange is the New Black. Maybe.
I don't know Lucky One either. Yeah. You know, I'm going to kill Ant-Man.
Okay.
Because, dude, I've had it with ants.
Okay.
No more ants. No more ants.
For longtime listeners, the ants that Rahul failed to defeat last summer have returned. And
they have returned.
I saw fucking ants in my kitchen the other day. And it's like, dude, they're not supposed to come out of hibernation yet.
Yeah, but they sensed your weakness and found.
It's really not okay. Like, oh my God. God.
You're just shouting at the ants. You can't do this. This is illegal.
Fucking global warming, dude. Seriously, this is so bad.
Anyways,
they're not even going to hibernate at all.
Okay, so you're now down to fuck and marry, and your options are The Lucky One and Aqua Teen Hunger Force : movie film for theaters.
I don't know anything about The Lucky One, but it sounds like I'm going to be getting lucky.
Okay. So you're fucking the lucky one.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know anything about it. Let me Google it really quick.
Nah, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter.
It's too late. I'm Googling it. Oh, this is a good bang one. This looks like the picture looks like they're both AI generated. Like, it doesn't look real.
Yep, and the porn parody would be called The Fucky One.
So that's perfect.
Yeah. Okay.
And obviously I'm going to marry HHF movie, of course.
Yep. HHF : movie film for theaters.
Yes.
Okay. Brandon, would you like to go next, or should I?
I'll go next.
Okay, your three movies are Funny Games, the American remake, Victoria and Abdul, which appears to be about Queen Victoria, played by Judi Dench, naturally befriending an Arab guy, and Unsane.
I don't know any of these movies. What the fuck?
Well, he's definitely banging and marrying the Judi Dench one. I mean,
I will say probably you want to kill Funny Games, because any interaction with that movie is going to be very unpleasant for you. That is a hard fucking watch.
Because it's so bad?
No, it is made by Michael Haneke, and it is basically an indictment of the audience for wanting to watch violent movies, and it has one of the cruelest, like, things I have ever seen in a motion picture.
Oh, yeah, I've seen Funny Games. I don't remember it that well.
Oh, is this the one where the two people go into that house and they just harass everybody and kill them?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep, I've seen that.
Okay, a lot of funny games fans in the house.
I don't know that this helps me. I mean, I guess I'll kill funny games and then just, you know, 50-50 flip a coin for the other two. I don't even know them.
Okay. I think, let me look up Unsane, because the poster to that looks kind of cool. Unsane is an 2018 American psychological horror film directed by Steven Soderbergh. Oh, I think this is the one where the woman pretends she's having side effects to get away with murdering a guy. I don't know.
That doesn't sound like marriage material.
Yeah, well, it doesn't really sound like it's a great idea to fuck it either, honestly. So.
Brand's a crazy dude.
Yep. Okay, I'm going next. My movies are Nine, which is a picture of a guy in a trench coat and then a bunch of women in lingerie hanging out behind him.
Rigged.
Friday the 13th, Part 2, and 3, which I think might be about Dale Earnhardt. It's starring Barry Pepper as Dale Earnhardt. I'm going to kill the Dale Earnhardt. It's also called the Dale Earnhardt story. I'm going to kill that because, you know, already dead. I'm going to marry Friday the 13th Part 2 because it has an excellent, strong female lead who I think would make a great life partner. And I guess I'm going to fuck a 9, which is good because it does have women in lingerie on the poster. So, yeah.
When you first said 9, I thought it was a movie with like the animated one with the burlap sack people.
Oh, yeah. That one's... pretty, I mean, I liked it in theaters. I don't know. It has that really weird bobcat monster thing.
Yeah.
Oh, it turns out 9 is a romantic musical drama film directed by Rob Marshall and starring Daniel Day-Lewis. And I don't know. Could be cool. Oh, guess what the tagline for 9 is?
One less than 10.
Because 7, 8, 9. I don't know.
This holiday season, be Italian.
Is that a tagline? That's not a tagline. Yeah,
it's on the poster. I swear it.
Holiday season.
Swear it on my father's beans. It's on the poster. Here, look at it for yourself.
Father's beans.
Yeah. There. Look at the Discord if you don't believe me. This holiday season, be Italian.
Like, I don't know. I feel like that. That better work for a macaroni grill ad than.
Yep. Okay. Anyways, let's go ahead and bring this on home by doing some recommendations and cautions. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, I don't know why I asked. We're going to do it even if you guys violently object, I guess we
just could just not maintain the facade that this is a democracy.
Yeah. Okay, anyways, Rahul, why don't you go first?
I am going to recommend Clarkson's Farm.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it expertly weaves a narrative which may or may not be real, but Clarkson is always funny. And it's cool to see a complete noob who's also something of an idiot try his hand at mechanized farming.
Okay.
A lot of fun to watch. I recommend
always it. Just, this is why I love you, Rahul. Never possible to predict what you are going to recommend. Always
it's
something to
show, man.
No, that sounds good. I've been meaning to watch that, so maybe I should do that sooner than later.
Okay. Do you have a caution as well?
No caution.
Okay. Brandon, would you like to go next?
I have a caution, but no recommendation. Caution is the movie Pearl. It's a prequel to the movie X, which was a slasher horror movie set on a farm in Texas in the 70s where a group of, I want to call them kids, but I guess they were like, you know, 20s or early 30s, to go to like rent a room / barn on this farm to make porn without the like owners knowing this. It's kind of like the Airbnb did, but obviously there's no Airbnb in the 70s. And, you know, bad stuff happens and a bunch of killing ensues. And it sort of ends with the old lady at the farm is kind of also crazy and participating in the murdering. And so Pearl is the prequel, which is her, that old lady's early life. She's played by Mia Goth, who was a different girl in the first movie. And I think that kind of the problem is that I expected Pearl to be similar to X in terms of like the level of slasheriness, but Pearl was a lot slower. I think like a lot slower. Mia Goth had a few interesting like performances. And also the woman who played her mother in this also had like one good monologue. But other than that, I was just kind of bored a lot of the time. So I'd say that you could still, if you liked X, you could still watch it just with the knowledge, you know, don't go in with the expectation that it's going to be very similar to X. But also, since the third movie that's coming out later is going to be a sequel to X, I don't think there's anything you need to know from, or I don't suspect there's going to be anything you need to know from this movie to watch the third movie. You could probably just skip this.
Yeah, I'll stand up for it a little because, like, it's weirdly this, like, horror-ish retelling of, like, those, like, really big budget, like, beautiful Technicolor dramas they used to make in the 40s and 50s. And that is such a strange idea that I kind of have to respect it, even though it is really pokey. But the other thing is that final shot, right? Where it, you know.
Yeah.
But that made me laugh so much to think about what the dude she's looking at while that's happening must be thinking, right?
Yeah.
Just like she's, you know, well, anyways, I don't want to spoil it. Yeah. It's boring. It's like pokey, but interesting. Anyways. Okay. And I have two recommendations, no cautions. So first off is the book Black River Orchard by Chuck Wendig. Now, you guys, if you know Chuck Wendig, you probably know him for having the worst fucking account on Twitter. He's the author of that famous, like, I'm going to read one of his tweets real quick. Wendig coffee. This is an actual verbatim quote from this man who is a professional author put out into the world. Wednesday, the day you flumpty foo, the day you boppity bop and zippity zoom with, but the truth is razza frazza wuzza wooza. What I'm saying is maybe your brain isn't working either, but that's okay because you're great. P.S. You need a firmware upgrade in the form of coffee. And it's a bunch of shit like that. And it's pretty bad. But I also discovered that he wrote an enormous number of White Wolf RPGs in the mid-2000s, which means that he wrote a significant portion of my personality. And I was trying to reconcile like how he wrote, like, I think pretty cool lore for like Werewolf the Forsaken with also these fucking horrible cringe tweets all the time. And so I decided to read one of his books. And this is a book about like a man he's bet everything on, he's got a like orchard, the orchard's not doing well, but he's got these brand new apples that he spent 7 years getting ready and he's going to take them to market and it's going to take over the world, hopefully. And he does take them to the market and they actually are like incredibly good and almost addictive. But it turns out there's a bunch more sinister stuff happening and things take a hard, hard turn into body horror about halfway through. And you know what? This was a perfectly serviceable horror novel. The scary stuff was like really gross, which is great. The jokes are bad, but because it's a horror novel and he's really sticking with a horror novel, he can't tell that many jokes because jokes, you know, break the tension. So it kind of played to his strengths, which are good plotting, efficient characterization, and gross stuff, and steered away from his weaknesses, which is that he has the worst sense of humor God ever saw fit to give a human. And yeah, you could do a lot worse. It's, you know, I think the audiobook's like 21 hours, and I had a pretty good time and was consistently entertained by it. So yeah. And then my other recommendation is today, right? I was trying to figure out how to do hinges properly because I've been doing these workout videos and I keep doing hinges and I don't feel any burn, which means that I'm probably like, there's no way in hell I'm really good at this one exercise to the point where I can just do it without burn. So I messaged Rahul and I'm like, hey, how do I do hinges? Send him a video of myself. And Rahul's like, yeah, you're fucking up. And then Rahul responded by sending me a video of how to do a hinge. But he's like, but first it's, to do a hinge properly, like to make sure you're doing it right, it's really important to take your shirt off. And he just whipped his shirt off. And you know what? Rahul's chest is fucking glorious. So be friends with Rahul and get him to take his shirt off. It's well worth it.
Hey, I'll take my shirt off for you, man. Anytime. Hell yeah.
Yep. I suspect he just took his shirt off right now.
Yeah, I ripped it off, actually. Yeah. I just flexed it off. It just popped off. I'm going to pop his shirt off right now.
Yep. Yep. That he flexed off his undershirt and then he flexed off his outer shirt. Don't question it. It just happened.
Hey, it's still winter. The ants don't know it, but.
Yeah. You just need to move into a small studio apartment on the fourth floor where the ants can't get you.
I'm thinking about it, man. Although ants can probably make it to the fourth floor, no goddamn problem.
Well, the key thing is you constantly sneak sugar onto the floor of the first floor to stop them from measuring.
Oh, that's a good idea.
You're just constantly
distraction tactic.
Yeah, you're just constantly hucking half-eaten lollipops through the window of the apartment below you.
Why would you could already? Have I had ants?
Yeah.
In New Mexico, a bit at my parents' house, they had problems for a while. Yeah, it's really hard to get rid of them.
They're so bad, dude. Even if you're clean, you know, and your parents are clean.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Their house is super clean and they continue to have ant problems for
a
long
time. It's ludicrous. They just won't leave you alone, man. What's a guy got to do?
Well, I wonder if you could already employ that sugar tactic just instead of vertically, you know, horizontally, you just put it on your fence line with your neighbors and get the ants to go away.
Redirect five.
You go to Costco and buy 5 10-pound bags of sugar and just dump them into a pile in your neighbor's backyard.
Can you imagine how angry they would be? It's like you can't even pick it up. It's just in the soil now.
Well, in my version of this, they start trying to do the Homer Simpson sugar kingpin storyline, just being driven mad by the power of having the sugar.
Just coat their lawns with honey.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I can't even imagine, dude. We have so many roaches here. It'd be so bad.
Well, I would assume roaches would just get stuck in the honey and die, so you're fine there.
Yeah, maybe. Then I just have a forest of dead roaches.
Well, it's in your neighbor's yard. What do you care?
I don't care at all. I'll just spray their whole house with fine mist of honey. They won't even know what hit them.
I mean, they'll probably guess honey.
There goes the neighborhood.
Anyway, Raul just offering up his neighbor's houses to the ants like sacrificial victims, perhaps donning a primitive ant costume while he does so.
Hey, if it works, it works, man. I'm a man who's after results.
I honestly don't think it would work.
Eh, well, it's worth a shot.
It seems like it would just increase the number of ants overall.
My good friends told me to try it, and they wouldn't lie to me.
Yeah.
Not about something so important.
Yeah, we have a policy of absolute honesty in this group and would never, for instance, lie about how bears get into cars.
Oh my god. I cannot believe you're bringing that up.
Oh, actually, Brandon, do you want to know the sort of end of that story?
Sure.
So I bet Rahul, I'm like, Rahul, it doesn't matter what trickery you employ, you can never get me to jump on a car. Again, right? You know, because my mind is powerful now. And then I'm like, hey, Rahul, for $50, I will jump up and down on the roof of a car. And you know what? He didn't take me up on it. He could have made me do it again, but he was too weak mentally. And now I know that he will never force me to again. And then Ronald paid me $45 and I went and jumped on the roof of a busted old Ford I hadn't got donated to charity yet. And you know what? Pretty good. So anyways, I know it sounds like that story wasn't me beating Rahul, but it was.
I know how that story doesn't sound like I was so annoying that someone just paid me to stop.
Nope, I defeated Rahul in a battle of wills and wits.
Yeah.
That's what that story
did.
Was. Yeah. Anyways, Rahul, do you have a plug?
I do have a plug. Thank you for asking.
You're very
I would
welcome.
Like to plug the Department of Finance and Administration of the great state of New Mexico for issuing me my 2020 tax year refund.
Yeah,
this month.
I continue to think you somehow fucked up the paperwork because usually they issue me mine within days of me filing.
I don't think I've ever got my state refund in days. It's always been months for state. But this is impressive. I guess
the fact that I always file early might help with the speed of the return.
Oh, I always file like on the exact last day, but
I guess your taxes are probably more like complicated than mine, owing to your massive crypto holdings and expensive.
Yeah, my massive crypto holdings that flow through my state return.
And expensive offshore businesses, both legal and illegal.
The islands I own and the various ant colonies planted across the world. All making money in their own jurisdictions that I have to allocate. It's a whole thing. I don't want to get into it, but, you know, it's reams of paperwork.
Yep, reams. Reams indeed.
I mean, it was a nice little surprise. I kind of just assumed that I just never was entitled to a refund because it was always like zeros or something. So weird. Maybe this is a scam.
I actually didn't pay taxes. I had a job, but I never bothered filing a return 2011 through 2012. And I kind of wonder if that was legal or not. Like, I was making so little money that I would have just essentially gotten all my withholdings back. And I kind of told myself, you know, if they're going to issue me a refund, this is optional. But now I'm like, was that true?
I think you still need to file no matter what.
Well, I didn't. And I guess,
I mean, if you get audited, it's over, you know?
I mean, I'll just say, well, I literally only had the money you guys already have a record of.
Someone's going to be like, well, yeah, you can make that argument. But what's going to happen is that the FBI is going to tow that sweet Civic you have, and it's just going to be gone, you know?
Well, the FBI is going to try to shoot me, but then fortunately my parasitic twin is going to emerge from my head and annihilate them with his fire powers. It's going to go, the battle cry of parasitic twins everywhere. Yeah. Anyways,
knee always fucking hurts, man. Fucking twin. Can't fucking walk right.
Anyways, I guess from all of us at Bad Time Radio, don't worship Satan. It's bad for you. Also, at one point, someone in this movie calls someone else a cock knocker. And I thought that was a very strange insult. So maybe throw that into your daily life. I don't know. You could puzzle your enemies by calling them that. Good night.
If you'd like to recommend an episode of Old Time Radio for us to listen to, send us a question for the mailbag, or a pedantic correction, you can reach us at radiobadtime@gmail.com. Our theme music is Finger in the Bottle by We Ashore Dedicated off their album No Ski Here Okie Sap. Thanks so much for listening.
Well, I was gonna get rid